This is The Dean's Desk with Kurt Mueller, Dean of the Faculty of Communication, Art, and Design.
Hello, our guest today is Professor Sandy Keady in the Creative Advertising Program at Seneca. Professor Keady's had a long and distinguished career both as a private practice but also at OCADU. And we're going to start off, Sandy, maybe you can tell us a little bit about your journey and what brought you to Seneca.
COVID. with all due respect.
It actually sort of started, honestly, by accident, I guess, in the structure with OCAD and the forms that you have to sort of fill out to apply for retirement, which I had done. I had put it out in 2019, and about 10 months later, yes, I was to be retired in 2020. And COVID, as we all know, hit in March 2020. I was still teaching. So all the plans of travel and this and that and retirement, theoretically, just like everyone else, hit a brick wall. So I was sitting on the couch. I literally was just sort of doing what everyone else was doing in lockdown. No restaurants, no gyms, no nothing. And I think I got an email or a call like, what are you doing? I went, nothing. What are you doing? And this was in the fall of 2020. So I said, well, you want to come and teach? I'm like, I would love to. So this is how it genuinely began. And by January 2021, I jumped on. Of course, we were all in the world of Zoom, of little tiny screens and names and some people putting their cameras on and some not. But I genuinely I absolutely loved it. I love the students. I love the process. I love the enthusiasm, respectfully, that we're all locked down and wherever we were, the things that were going on. So that really brought me here. And I haven't, looked back. I've just thoroughly enjoyed the migration to in-person, back to studio-based learning and the hybrids and the flex and the things that we're all kind of doing, but it's been a really great process. And again, the students are amazing. So that's been the great ticket.
Well, that's the feedback we're hearing about you. I've heard about you. Jason Deutsch, the program coordinator, raves about you. And one of the reasons you have such respect at Seneca is because you've been very modest about your background. You've won awards. Mm-hmm. You've worked for international companies. You've really brought innovation to the advertising space. Can you talk a little bit about your industry career and some of the trends and themes that you've noticed?
My career has evolved from, I started actually thinking that I was going to be an interior architect, interior designer at when it was called Ryerson, now Metropolitan. And I migrated over to OCA, it was known, and then it moved to a designate as a university. I was fortunate enough to work for, at that time, scholarships were given out, full-time scholarships to ad agencies. I won one with Leo Burnett Agency back in the day, and they hired me. And there was other ones that were going. Martin Suchek, he won for the McCann Erickson. I won. It was funny because we're both classmates and through OCA. And so that jumped me right into the ad business. And I was working at major places like Ogilvy and Mather, which for about 9 years, and Saatchi, and smaller shops that were offshoots from agency partners. And I went through that career. And it's really all about people. I mean, it's about people and brands and accounts and thinking. And that's really how my sort of career just started to evolve, moving through that. And again, the compliment coming into OCAD was just a request very similar to maybe to here. It's just like, hey, what are you doing? Do you want to come and teach a course at OCA or OCAD at the time? And I said, sure, I can teach one course. I'm balancing a full-time career at this point at advertising agencies. And one course turned into two courses, turned into three, et cetera. So that teeter-totter, but I thoroughly enjoyed the academic process and understanding curriculum and how the programs fit together and weave together. So I really sort of enjoyed structuring classes and then eventually being appointed as chair to the advertising program. Again, it just comes down to people, a great output, and just a desire for learning and for problem solving.
So speaking of curriculum, major change in the advertising program here mm-hmm. quite recently, informed by what is happening in the industry. Yeah. What can you tell us about that?
What we're doing, and I think when I came here and sort of looking at the CAB program, and again, I'm very grateful and very fortunate to have been asked, say, hey, can you give us some of your input, sort of what the success rate we were doing at OCAD, because we were actually running a program when I left of almost about 90-95% employment. And I'm talking internships and full-time hires. So this was amazing. Like we started to really sort of push the envelope in terms of successful graduates. Similarly, I think seeing here, you've got a great choice of stream. You can go either the strategic, the account side, or you can go the creative side. And the creative side had a lot of both in terms of great writers and development going on there, but maybe a little lighter just on well, we called it the tools of the trade. That's what we sort of decided to sort of dive into with Jason and co, and just all the teammates who were trying to develop the new program. So the tools of the trade started to focus a bit more on this hands-on, because that's what, again, industry, as we're sitting here, is about. It's can I produce and edit? Can I write? Can I actually run with a camera? Can I write? Can I maybe art direct? Can I apply all of these by creating better visualists, better art directors and designers, better writers, better videographers, social? That's really what got developed and is now part of the new CAB. And what I'm seeing, I think the students are really, they're really engaged. I know that much. They're super engaged. They're trying super hard. They're doing some really good work, even at a second semester level, which I'm delighted to see. So I think they're embracing all the new programs and the new classes that are being introduced to them. That's what's happening.
Can you give some thoughts on how AI is influencing the industry?
Well, it's there. I think everybody is using it to some level or some degree, whether it's sort of, maybe helping to help in actual writing or design work, enhancing. We also use it in the design process. So my background, again, is I'm trained as what they call an art director, but I'm actually a very strategic creative director. And so kickstarting some thinking process, that's where I use like ChatGPT and AI. And these are programs that are available to the students. They've got Adobe Firefly. They've got in their arsenal, I know many of them are looking at Midjourney. They're looking at, different programs that they're using. Many of them are using ChatGPT. So I use it as a sort of an inspiration, a kickstarter, and I encourage them to use it. It isn't an end result. And that's where you see someone who has a hand with six fingers. And I kind of go, I don't think you did that. I think something else, some of the keywords that got dialed in were incorrect. But that's where, and in terms of industry, I mean, it is being utilized. And I think we've got to frame it in a positive state. It's not a replacement. It's an enhancement. And again, it can do stuff so quickly in terms of research data, so fast. All due respect, Google. I can't, and research has to inform the creative solution. So that's where I see it as a terrific supplement and again, part of the tools.
Totally agree. I mean, I've noticed myself how I realize now, Google searches is really terrible. I use Copilot now when I need to know anything. Mm-hmm. And it's much, much better. And the other piece is when you do a Google search, the first thing is always an ad. It's always a series
absolutely.
Of ads, right? So you know right away that they're not really trying to get you what you need. They're trying to get you to buy something. Yeah. A couple of things stood out in your LinkedIn profile that I wanted to ask you about, Sandy. You talk about how convergent communications work today. I wonder if you could define that and talk about that, as well as something that you call hyper choice and consumer fatigue.
You only need one brand of toothpaste to clean your teeth. As my dentist used to say, or still does, he says, it's basically soap. It's laundry detergent in your mouth. Why are there 65 choices when you go into Shoppers Drug Mart? Same thing for shampoo. So the hyper choice and the confusion that we get, and I use it in part of the lectures that I create and write, that's hyper choice. That's confusion. That's just a battery of things. And depending upon your influencers, your feeds, who you're listening to, your false advertising, things that haven't been fact checked, can really sort of take people sort of down many sort of different paths. I guess the other thing around convergent culture is a term that Henry Jenkins, and just out of MIT, there was a book a number of years ago, amazing, talked about convergent culture. And I sort of glommed onto that part in readings and then also in developing lectures and developing sort of content. We're never on one platform, if you will. We're never on one medium. We're never just completely on our phones scrolling and trolling. I learned, actually, you actually thumb scroll 78 miles, which is the equivalent of, I used to run marathons in my spare time, three marathons. And I was like, that was a great, it actually turned into an ad campaign for a footwear company. And they just basically said, get off the couch, stop thumb scrolling and put on a pair of our shoes. And I thought, brilliant. That's great. But to say that, you're not on your phone, you're not on your laptop, you're not in front of a computer all the time. So this convergence is where things have to overlap. And when the students here, and again at OCAD, but here, and I love again the IMCs, the 360s, just finished actually some recent presentations. The students were presenting work to some of the agencies just this past week, and some of the teams, I got shout outs on LinkedIn, we won, which they need to create campaigns that not only reside in digital media, but they have to be obviously in analog and traditional media, installations, my phone, my emails, PR, everything. And so this is where you need to really be observant. And most people, I hate to say, aren't. They're to be observant of just how many opportunities are there. And that's again where the CAB program, there are so many opportunities for jobs. There are so many that I think people relegate themselves to certain just, I'm going to be this or that or this or that. There's a lot of depth that they need to really sort of explore. And again, the program, the instructors, the faculty, I think really serve that up, and it's up to the students to really dig in a little further and find that, and they will.
I think you mentioned you run 3 marathons. I didn't know that.
I used to.
What
advertising work was a part-time job. You know, I was working out twice a day. Oh my, what an idiot I was. Anyway.
How do you train for a marathon?
You run a lot. Yeah. You do weights. You run long distance. That's another thing. Like that's kind of flips back to you, Kurt, because, you know, people say, well, am I going to learn this program like within 3 weeks? Or am I going to become a writer or an art director, like a master club within the end of semester? I'm going, no. No, you're not. No one is. And you're going to learn all your life. And that's what this is all set up for. You have to keep refreshing your head. And the same goes with marathon training. You can't run 26.2 really hurtful miles. And I'm just, you know, 26.2, whatever it converts at Columbia. I can't remember. Anyway, just to say, it takes time. And all of this, you have to sort of work up. And the same for the good writers, the good videographers, the good designers and art directors, the good storytellers. I mean, at the end of the day, we're all storytellers with a slant to visual, because most of our communication is probably visually driven these days with really strong narratives. So you got to train, and that's going to take a little time, and you're going to get it here. So that's what I used to do. Yeah, marathons.
What was it like completing your first marathon?
Painful. It was exhilarating and thrilling. And then basically your muscles start to seize up because there's so much muscle fatigue. Your muscles stiffen up. So I remember trying to go down the subway steps. I had to go down backwards because I couldn't actually tighten my quadriceps. So I had to go down back. Yeah, your body basically seizes up. It was exhilarating. It was great. Around mile 22, they call it you hit the wall. And I don't know if you're a runner or a sports, and no, you're shaking your head.
I play sports, but I don't run that. Yeah.
I guess that one would say I'm competitive, driven. So I wanted to prove. And then I did subsequent marathons and sub-marathons. I never did ultra marathons. I think those people are crazy. People who do absolutely long distances and triathlons. But I cycle and walk and swim and that kind of stuff. But my body just said, my back and my knees said no more running on that level. So I don't do that anymore.
You've cited as your role models, your parents, and your father has a very interesting background that I think a lot of people my age would know your father's work. That was all over the airwaves when I was growing up, and he was in film and broadcast, and you were surrounded by that milieu.
You know, my background was not going into dad's office in a tower or something when I was a kid growing up. It was coming to film studios. It was coming to the back 40, and you go play with the dolly. You go and sort of, look at film cans and that kind of stuff, and I'll see you a bit later. Yes, so my father, Who's Who Hinterland, for those people who don't know, it is an iconic series of commercials that was started in the 60s and went into the 70s, and he produced them. He basically, that's what the NFB, the National Film Board at the time, did, and this was part of the government and pushing that. I've had to explain this to students as well, and they go, what are you talking about? Because they think, you know, nowadays there's other different nature conservancies and this and that. And I'm going, no, this is the real McCoy. This is the real thing. He did those things. He sourced, I know, he had about 3 different film companies, and he actually worked with a fellow named Dan Gibson. That was one of his companies called Keg Productions. Dan Gibson, his son, went on to do Solitudes and all these meditative things things way back before the day where we all now are embracing mindfulness and Zen and all these things. But Who's Who Hinterland were commercials. They were 30 and 60 second black and white commercials, if I recall. And his life and career went on to a lot of wildlife shows and broadcast stuff, with doing features for CBC and feature films and doing commercials. So he straddled commercial, feature, and broadcast all the way through. And they are iconic to Canadian history. I have all the film cans. I had them all digitized. And I've had a couple of friends who've actually said, Sandy, you've got to, you know, get a grant and basically do a documentary, like for Netflix or whatever, on this, because it's a iconic material, right down to the audio, to the haunting sort of sound. I think it's a flute, if I'm not if I recall, but just the whole structure, the pacing. There's no music other than the intro within the entire spots. And I know they've been parodied, like by SNL and Second City and different comics, and people kind of they've been sitcommed and sort of used that way. But they are very unique, and they are part of Expo 67, Canadian history, 1960s and 70s, as the country was becoming 100 years old. So pretty proud of that.
Instantly recognizable when you hear that hear that soundtrack. We are here with Sandy Keady, professor in the advertising program at Seneca. Sandy, you mentioned meditation, and I know that you meditate on a regular basis. When did that start, and how has that influenced your life and your work?
Probably started a little bit ahead of the pandemic, and it was something that that's where Zoom, I will say, we all met on meditation circles online, because we couldn't get together, so we were sort of doing some of that. It's actually been extremely helpful. I'm not using necessarily groups of people that I work with, meditate with, and a coach. It's really helped to ground me. I mean, these are some of the words we all hear, kind of level you out so that you're not, you're maybe frustrated with something or a situation. You don't fly off a handle. You don't sort of lose it. You just become in the moment. And that is something that I've come to appreciate even more. And I think that's really where meditation has it's a great asset to sort of have in your own arsenal of coping with life. And we all know what's going on coming out of COVID. We've got inflation, we've got sadly wars going on, we've got food insecurity and housing issues and stuff. And sometimes taking that moment of self-care, not selfishness, but self-care, is something, again, I probably do it every day. And sometimes I'll do sessions with our groups, 3 hours, 8 hours, 12 hours, we'll do an actual meditation. You can talk. you can talk going through those links. Some friends of my family friends say, how do you do that? And I go, well, you breathe. And the first thing is breathing. And the first thing is what we sort of start with. So it's become a really good mechanism for me. You know, you asked me about marathoning, along with working out. So exercise has always been part of my life for 40 some odd years or more. So it's just, I'm always doing something, you know. So meditation is a really good tool in the toolkit.
Oh, that's so great to hear. And I think it's great modeling behavior for our students as well, because one of the things that we stress as an institution is work-life balance.
Yeah.
And that's really important. One of the other things we stress at Seneca that's a relatively new addition is something called the Human Skills Project, where we are embedding in all of the programs across Seneca these skills that really enable our graduates to work as part of a team, critical thinking, working with people from other cultures. How important is that in the advertising industry?
Huge. Maybe sometimes I've heard the terms soft skills used. There was a recent article I really enjoyed through the Atlantic Monthly. I'm a bit of a research nerd. I get so much material. And they talked about moral education, about having respect and compassion and empathy for, I'll use them now, the marketing terms, your target audience, how your brand behaves. And they have, all of these things have to be very, very authentic. So becoming understanding to those human skills that you're talking about is understanding, really understanding, and acting and embracing compassion and kindness and respect. I've said this to the students. I only said it last week when I probably had a few of them close to tears, because I was critiquing some of the work and I was being fairly industry strong, industry relative, I'll just say, because I wanted them to be prepared. So I was being very critical of some of their presentations. And I said at the end to many, and I said, listen, you know, I absolutely respect you. I value you as a person and your work. Please don't ever take this criticism, first of all, personally, but I'm being honest and I'm framing this with compassion, but also the sense that you can do this. And they were very accepting of that kind of thing. The other thing, I don't know if I should mention this or whatever, maybe you'll take it out. I actually am volunteering at a retirement home now. In my spare time, I have no time. But I decided to do this last fall. I thought, I need to do a bit of a give back. My mom had passed away in 2014 of Alzheimer's. She died in a retirement facility, and I would see her every day. I would finish my work at the university. I would drive up and usually join her for dinner in a couple of hours. What I did start to be observant of by seeing is the other residents in this facility and how lonely they were and how a lot of things that were going on. And I realized communication is, first of all, key. And I've gone back to the same facility where she was. They've embraced me, and I absolutely adore it. Because for a whole bunch, people just want to talk to each other. They want to be valued. They want to be heard. They want to be considered. This is all literature. We all can jump online and grab any recent books or blogs and stuff. And it doesn't matter what age you are, whether you are 24 or 84 or 94, you need to be heard. And it's really, really important in industry, in advertising, in marketing, and what we do is to see that audience clearly. And anyways, it's giving me a great, as well as here, a great fulfillment on what people are. Because again, back to AI, we're not being replaced. And we need this human connection and human skills hugely. So sign me up. I'll join in on that. That sounds great. I love it.
I couldn't agree more in terms of the absolute need for human connection. And there's been something of an epidemic of loneliness in our society linked to really significant negative health outcomes, particularly among seniors. So that's really admirable that you're doing that. But as you say, you're getting some real satisfaction and gratification out of it as well.
COVID also, as we all know, I mean, you just read the reports, the mental health condition. I used to work, I was actually a board director with CMHA back in the day too. And understanding how fragile your mental state can be. And we all know what happened through COVID with a lot of isolation, a lot of loneliness, respectful to work, not saying the work ethic, but just industry and then education. It was a hard time. And a lot of students and young students really suffered, really, really suffered. Never mind their, collective parents and families with laptops on dining room tables and everything else going, please give me a break. I can't take this. I think we're all glad it's over. Is it over? It's got to be over. Please. Anyway, sorry.
I think the worst of it's over.
Yeah. It's over. Yes. Yeah.
So, Sandy, one of the things that we try to do at Seneca is prepare our students for what's coming down the pipe in 5-10 years, or at least give them the skills to adapt to those changes. Mm-hmm. What do you see in the advertising industry?
Not having a crystal ball, just to say what will come to advertising will still prevail. I think, if anything, just what the CAB program, going to say it this way, just what the new the program is delivering in terms of having the arsenal of tools, the choices of being both strategic and also creative, and also having the critical thinking skills to evaluate these things and be hands-on is what you need. I think the fact that the program is 2 years versus 4 years is an asset. Again, people want to get out quite quickly and think, but you've really got to sort of dive into that. Who's to say the 5, the 10, the 15 years, but definitely the cross-platform, what we call the IMC, the Integrated Marketing Program, the 360, recognizing you've got to be adaptive to any of these, I'll call them channels. I know that's a bit of an old term. It's funny how all these terms are all sort of interspersed and replaced, but you have to be adaptive. And I think, again, setting up students, graduates for continual change. I mean, that's always been, the mantra. The only constant is change. So just being ready that even though you might graduate with a certain skill applied in a certain area, that might change in another 2 years time once you're out there. But at least you have the background and the foundation to adapt. So I think that's that's kind of where we're collectively headed. But again, who has a crystal ball to sort of say what will? I don't. It's not going to go away. If anything, of course, I wish for. This is my own, I guess, crystal. I wish for more regulation, to be honest. I think what we're seeing, you know, the fear mongering, the false information, we all follow those things to a certain degree. And then you have to park your judgment and say, is that real? Is that really happening? Or is that a real statement? And you know, there's all these things. So I hope for, there's lots of things that are going on globally in terms of regulations and things, but it's a challenge. And that's really my wish list, is I hope to see a little more parameters, I'll just sort of say to that. So.
Agreed. I mean, one of the kind of scary things about the proliferation of the negative aspects of AI is you've got lots of people now basically living in an alternative reality.
Absolutely.
That has no relation to the real world. So that's kind of scary. Anything else you'd like to add, Sandy?
Again, I'm absolutely at the stage of career and life. This was an unexpected turn for me to come here. I'm absolutely loving it. As I said, I really enjoy the students, the process, the other faculty, just the content, what's going on. I'm happy to help. Happy to sort of jump in, whether it's within CAB, within other things, and get to know just the whole institution. So it's a hell of a lot of fun. So keep up the good work.
Thanks so much, Sandy. We are happy to have you and really happy that your journey brought you to Seneca. That was Professor Sandy Keaty in the Creative Advertising Program at Seneca.
You have been listening to The Dean's Desk with Kurt Mueller, Dean of the Faculty of Communication, Art, and Design, produced by Seneca's radio broadcasting students.